Mason City Globe Gazette and Fort Dodge Messenger for Friday, March 8th, 2024. Also, friendly reminder, this is Daylight Saving Weekend, so don't forget to turn your clocks forward an hour to go to bed. So looking at the front page of the Globe Gazette, the big headline is U.S. to set up port in Gaza for aid. And then the second story is also national in nature. Families long for closure 10 years after flight MH370 disappearance. Very little, if any, local news in the Mason City Globe Gazette today. As a reminder, you're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. I'm your reader, Mary Frances, and we'll get started on the front page of the Globe Gazette. There's a photograph of a man on his knees sobbing and being supported by other people as he touches a body wrapped in a sheet lying on the ground. Caption reads, Palestinians mourn relatives killed in Israeli bombardments on Thursday in front of the morgue at the hospital in Deir al-Balah in the Gaza Strip. Subheading, fears of humanitarian crisis intensify after ceasefire talks stall. Dateline, Washington. U.S. President Joe Biden intended to announce a plan Thursday for the U.S. military to help establish a temporary port on the Gaza coast to increase the flow of aid into the territory during the Israel-Hamas war, according to senior administration officials. The announcement during Biden's State of the Union address comes amid a widening humanitarian crisis across Gaza that has forced many people to scramble for food to survive and begun causing deaths from malnutrition. Hopes for reaching a ceasefire before the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which starts in the coming days, stalled on Thursday when Hamas said its delegation left Cairo, where talks on a deal were being held. The outline for the ceasefire would have included a wide infusion of aid into Gaza. Aid groups say their efforts to deliver needed supplies to Gaza are hampered because of the difficulty of coordinating with the Israeli military, the ongoing hostilities, and the breakdown of public order. It's even more difficult to get aid to the isolated north. U.S. officials who spoke on condition of anonymity said the planned operation will not require American troops on the ground to build the pier that is intended to allow more shipments of food, medicine, and other essential items. The officials did not provide details about how the pier would be built. One of the options under consideration is for the military to provide a floating pier called a JLOTS, or Joint Logistics Over the Shore, another U.S. official said on condition of anonymity. This large floating pier allows supplies to be delivered without having a fixed port in place, alleviating the need to have troops on a dock on shore. Ships can sail to the pier, which is secured by anchors, and dock there. Aid moving into the pier would likely be by commercial ship or contracted vessel, the official said. Defense Department spokesman Major General Pat Ryder said in a statement on Thursday that U.S. officials and international partners were looking at options, including using commercial companies and contractors. The port will allow shipments to flow into Gaza via Cyprus from the U.S. military and allies, the administration officials said. American General Eric Kurilla, head of U.S. Central Command, told the U.S. Senate Armed Services Committee on Thursday that he briefed officials on such a maritime option. He said Central Command provided options for increasing the number of trucks taking aid to areas in northern Gaza. Kurilla also said Thursday that exploding violence in the Middle East, fueled by Iran, presents the most likely threat to the U.S. homeland, and the risk of an attack by violent extremists in Afghanistan on American and Western interests abroad is increasing. Kurilla said the Islamic State group's Khorasan affiliates in Afghanistan and Syria, quote, retain the capability and the will to attack and could strike in as little as 6 months, with little to no warning. In other comments, He said the U.S. has been using directed energy weapons to shoot down drones, but could use more of those so the Navy doesn't have to use large, expensive missiles to take out the smaller threats. The Biden administration's latest move provides one more layer to the extraordinary dynamic that has emerged as the United States has had to go around Israel, its main Mideast ally, and find ways to get aid into Gaza, including through airdrops that started last week. Biden has been a vital partner to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's military offensive following the Hamas military group's October 7th attacks in Israel. That includes providing arms to Israel and fending off efforts to censure Israel for the soaring deaths among Gaza civilians. Administration officials have grown increasingly frustrated at Netanyahu for seeming to shrug off much of the U.S. pressure for Israel to do more to reduce civilian deaths and to allow humanitarian aid. Quote, "This is an expensive, inefficient workaround to a problem that has other ready solutions," said Brian Finucane, that's F-I-N-U-C-A-N-E, who's a former State Department official and now with the International Crisis Group. He said that about the U.S. announcement of a temporary port and wartime sea route. He also said, "It's another symptom of the pathology of the overall approach to the war in Gaza, which is that the Biden administration is unwilling to use U.S. leverage, either unilaterally or multilaterally, to try to influence the conduct of the war by Netanyahu," he said. Another story from the front page of the Globe Gazette. Families long for closure 10 years after flight MH370 disappearance. Plane left Kuala Lumpur on March 8, 2014, with 239 on board, then went missing. This is from the Associated Press, and there's a photo of a gentleman, and the caption reads, "Chinese farmer Li Eryu, whose son Li Yanlin was on the missing Malaysia Airlines flight." The copy reads, "Over the past decade, Grace Subathira Nathan," we'll just call her Grace, "graduated from law school, got married, opened a law firm, and had two babies. But part of her is still frozen in time, still in denial over the loss of her mother on a missing Malaysia Airlines plane in 2014. There's been no funeral service, and Grace, age 35, still speaks of her mother in the present tense. When she got married in 2020, she walked down the aisle with a picture of her mother, tucked in a bouquet of daisies, chosen because of her mother's name, Anne Catherine Daisy. The Malaysian criminal lawyer has become one of the key faces of Voice 370, that's a next of kin support group, as she channeled her grief into keeping alive the quest for answers in the mysterious disappearance of flight MH370 that has ripped many families apart. Quote, "In terms of going on, I progressed in my career, in my family life, but I'm still trying to push for the search of MH370 to continue. I'm trying to push for the plane to be found, so in that way I have not moved on," said Grace, whose mother was originally not meant to be on the flight. She was due to fly a week earlier, but delayed her trip to care for Grace's ailing grandmother, who died months after the plane disappeared. "Logically, in my brain," she said, "I know I'm probably never going to see her again, but I haven't been able to accept that fully. And I think emotionally, there's a gap that hasn't been bridged due to the lack of closure." The baffling disappearance of Flight MH370 still captivates people around. The Boeing 777 left Kuala Lumpur with 239 people on March 8, 2014. But it dropped off radar screens shortly after and never made it to Beijing, which was its destination. Investigators say someone deliberately shut down the plane's communication system and took the plane off course. The jet is believed to have plunged into a remote part of the southern Indian Ocean, based on satellite data, but a massive underwater search was fruitless. No wreckage or bodies have ever been found, except for some fragments that washed ashore on the eastern African coast and Indian Ocean islands. Families of those on board, many from China, have found different ways to cope with the grief over the years, but one thing is constant, their mission for justice and answers. The pain continues to torment some families in China who are skeptical about theories of the plane's fate and continue to hang on to hope that their loved ones may one day return. Like Grace, Chinese farmer Li Eryu also has not held a funeral or memorial service for his only son. He has a board at home on which he counts each passing day since the plane disappeared. Li Yanlin, age 27, had a promising career as an engineer with a Chinese telecommunications company that was cut short by the tragedy. The pain comes easily, triggered by a sound, an object, even a flower, he said. After all these years, I've been drifting along in life like a ghost, he said. When I meet my friends and relatives, I have to put on a smile. At night, I can become true to myself. When all is quiet in the dead of night, I weep without people knowing. Li recently moved to stay with his daughter due to poor health. At his former residence, newspaper clippings of the missing aircraft that have yellowed with age still hang on the wall, and his son's room is largely kept untouched. I believe my son is still on the flight, that he's still around, or he's living on a remote island like Robinson Crusoe, he said. Li and his wife seldom travel, but have made multiple trips to Malaysia to seek answers, and to Madagascar, where parts of the aircraft have washed up on beaches. The lack of answers merely deepens their agony. Chinese families that have rejected a small compassion payment from the airline. They have sued 5 entities, including Malaysia Airlines, Boeing, and aircraft engine maker Rolls-Royce, seeking larger compensation and answers over who should be held accountable. Hearings started in Beijing in November, and a verdict could take months. On the 100th day after the flight vanished, Li penned his first poem, expressing his longing for his son. Since then, he's written about 2,000 poems that have helped him cope with the grief. We shouted to the earth, Malaysia Airlines 370. The earth roars, it is silent and does not go away. It is not here, not here. Don't you see the heavy backpack on my son's shoulders? Drops of sweat from hard work shine on his forehead, says one verse. We appeal to 10,000 times, restart the search. I wrote down my feelings. The only reason I could survive all these years is because of these words, he said. There is now new hope for closure. During a 10-year remembrance event in Kuala Lumpur last Sunday, Malaysia's government said it will consider a proposal for a new search by U.S. Marine Robotics firm Ocean Infinity, which conducted a no-find, no-fee hunt in 2018. It's unclear whether Ocean Infinity has new data to pinpoint the location of the plane. Quote, once we know what happened, only then can a true form of healing begin. Until those questions are answered, no matter how much you try to move on or how much you try to close that chapter, it will never go away, he said. Essentially zero local news in the Globe Gazette today. So continuing on to page 2, TSA tests self-screening lanes in Vegas. System intended to let people pass through without pat. Dateline Las Vegas. Federal airport security officials have unveiled passenger self-screening lanes at the busy Harry Reid International Airport in Las Vegas, with plans to test it for use in other cities around the country. How do we step into the future? This is a step, said a system designer, Dmitry Kuzinov, Science and Technology Undersecretary at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. He said the interface with people makes all the difference. The Transportation Security Administration checkpoint, initially only in Las Vegas, only for TSA pre-check customers, and only using the English language, incorporates a screen with do-it-yourself instructions, telling people how to smoothly pass themselves and their luggage, their carry-on luggage rather, through pre-flight screening with little or no help from uniformed TSA officers. We want to avoid passengers having to be patted down, said John Fortune, who is program manager of the Department of Homeland Security's Screening at Speed program and a developer of the prototype. Instead of a boxy, belt-fed device using a stack of gray trays, this futuristic-looking baggage and personal belongings inspection system looks like a scaled-down Starship medical magnetic resonance imaging machine. It uses an automated bin return that sanitizes the trays with germ-killing ultraviolet light between users. Travelers step into a separate clear glass body scanning booth with a video display inside showing how to stand when being sensed with what officials said is the type of millimeter wave technology already in use around the country. A reporter found it sensitive enough to identify a forgotten handkerchief in his pocket. He did not have to remove his shoes. Quote, "Really, one of the main aims here is to allow individuals to get through the system without necessarily having to interact directly with an officer and at their own pace," said Christina Peach, who is a TSA administrator involved in the system design. "It's also about not feeling rushed," she said. Nationally, nearly all passengers who pay to enroll in the TSA PreCheck program pass through screening in 10 minutes or less, said agency spokesman R. Carter Langston, while regular traveler and carry-on screening takes about 30 minutes. Peach said 8 uniformed TSA officers might be needed to staff 2 lanes of the new system. That's compared with 12 officers in lanes today. However, they said agents, including union members, would just be freed from hands-on screening to focus more attention on broader security concerns. "No one is going to lose their job," Burke said. Fortune declined to estimate the cost of designing the system, but he said the type of scanners used were similar to ones already deployed around the country. Officials said they'll time how quickly travelers pass through the prototype during evaluations this year. Testing is being done at a unique in-the-nation innovation checkpoint that TSA unveiled in 2019 in a sprawling international arrivals terminal that opened in 2012 at Harry Reid Airport. It already features screening lanes with instruction displays and estimated wait times. "This change in technology is for people who want to get through a checkpoint faster," said Keith Jeffries, who is a former TSA director at Los Angeles International Airport and is now vice president of K2 Security Screening Group. That's a company that installs screening systems at shipping ports, including airports. "It'll be a great step, but I anticipate it will be for the experienced passengers," he said. Jeffries compared the new system to self-checkout lanes that were introduced in the 1980s and are now common at supermarkets across the nation. He recalled that some shoppers initially avoided scanning their own purchases. "It's going to take time to educate the public," he said, of the TSA screening lanes. "You're going to have a new generation of travelers that just wants to get through with the least amount of hassle and delay. I think eventually we'll see them more and more," he said. Turning to the Nation and World page, Sweden enters alliance. Country ends decades of neutrality in wake of Russian invasion. This is from the Associated Press. Sweden formally joined NATO as the 32nd member of the Transatlantic Military Alliance on Thursday, ending decades of post-World War II neutrality and centuries of broader non-alignment with major powers as security concerns in Europe spiked following Russia's 2022 invasion of Ukraine. President Joe Biden congratulated Sweden on its admission and said it was a sign that Russian President Vladimir Putin's incursion into Ukraine united rather than divided the alliance. Quote, "When Putin launched his brutal war of aggression against the people of Ukraine, he thought he could weaken Europe and divide NATO," Biden said in a statement. He continued, "Instead, in May of 2022, Sweden and Finland, two of our close partners with two highly capable militaries, made the historic decision to apply for full NATO membership," Biden said. "With the addition of Sweden today, NATO stands more united, determined, and dynamic than ever, now 32 nations strong." Swedish Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson and Secretary of State Antony Blinken presided at a ceremony in which Sweden's instrument of accession to the alliance was officially deposited at the State Department. "This is an historic moment for Sweden. It's historic for the alliance. It's historic for the transatlantic relationship, Blinken said. Our NATO alliance is now stronger and larger than it's ever been. Today is truly an historic day, Christensen agreed. We are humbled. We are also proud. We will live up to high expectations from all NATO allies. United we stand. Unity and solidarity will be Sweden's guide and light. Sweden now will take its rightful place at NATO's table, with an equal say in shaping NATO policies and decisions, said NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg in a statement. Stoltenberg underscored that the Nordic country now enjoys the protection granted under Article 5, the ultimate guarantee of allies' freedom and security. Article 5 of NATO's treaty obliges all members to come to the aid of an ally whose territory or security is under threat. It's only been activated once, activated by the U.S. after the September 11th attacks in 2001, and is the collective security guarantee that Sweden has sought since Russia invaded Ukraine. Sweden, along with Finland, which joined NATO last year, both abandoned long-standing military neutrality that was a hallmark of the Nordic states' Cold War foreign policy after Russia invaded Ukraine in early 2022. Parents. Investigation absolves city police of missteps during 2022 attack. Dateline Uvalde, Texas. An investigation Uvalde city leaders ordered into the Robb Elementary School shooting put no blame on police officers and defended their actions Thursday, despite acknowledging a series of rippling failures during the fumbled response to the 2022 classroom attack that left 19 children and two teachers dead. Several family members of victims walked out in anger midway through a presentation that portrayed Uvalde Police Department officers of acting swiftly and appropriately. In contrast to previous scathing and sweeping state and federal reports that faulted police at every level. The investigator who presented the report blamed families who rushed to the school that day for compromising the police response, prompting an eruption of anger from several families as some stormed out. Law enforcement took more than an hour to get inside the classroom and kill the gunman, even as children inside the classrooms called 911, begging police to rescue them. Quote, "You said they did it in good faith. You call that good faith? They stood there for 77 minutes," said Kimberly Mata Rubio, whose daughter Lexi was among those killed in the attack after the presentation ended. Another person in the crowd screamed, "Cowards!" Jesse Prado, an Austin-based investigator and former police detective who made the report for the Uvalde City Council, described several failures by responding local, state, and federal officers at the scene that day. Communication problems, poor training for live shooter situations, lack of available equipment, and delays on breaching the classroom. The city's report is just one of several probes into the massacre. Texas lawmakers found in 2022 that almost 400 local, state, and federal officers rushed to the scene, but they waited more than an hour before confronting the gunman. A Department of Justice report in January criticized the, quote, "cascading failures" of responding law enforcement. But Prado said his review showed that officers showed immeasurable strength and level-headed thinking as they faced fire from the shooter and refrained from shooting into a darkened classroom. Quote, "They were being shot at from 8 feet away from the door," Prado said. Officials say power lines ignited Texas wildfires. Two of the largest blazes left hundreds of square miles burned. Power lines ignited massive wildfires across the Texas panhandle that destroyed homes and killed thousands of livestock, officials said. They said it on Thursday, including the largest blaze in state history that the utility provider Xcel Energy said its equipment appeared to have sparked. The Texas A&M Forest Service said its investigators concluded that power lines ignited both the historic Smokehouse Creek fire, which has burned almost 1,700 square miles and spilled into neighboring Oklahoma, and the nearby Windy Deuce Fire, which has burned about 225 square miles. The wildfires that ignited last week in the windswept rural area prompted evacuations in a handful of small communities, destroyed as many as 500 structures, and killed at least 2 people. Containment levels have been increasing. The Smokehouse Creek Fire was 74% contained Thursday, while the Windy Deuce Fire was 89% contained. Downed power lines and other utility equipment have led to other major wildfires, including the deadly blaze in Maui last year and a massive California wildfire in 2019. Feds to increase focus on artificial intelligence. AG office warns of harsher sentences for high-tech crimes. The Justice Department will step up its focus on artificial intelligence, with officials warning Thursday that companies and people who deliberately misuse the technology to advance a white-collar crime like price fixing, fraud, or market manipulation will be at risk for a harsher sentence. Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco said the Justice Department will take into account how well a company is managing the risks of AI technology each time it assesses a corporate compliance program. Thursday's comments from the Justice Department's number one leader underscored the extent to which law enforcement officials are concerned about how rapidly developing technology could be exploited by foreign adversaries or by corporate criminals to harm the U.S. All new technologies are a double-edged sword, but AI may be the sharpest blade yet. It holds great promise to improve our lives, but great peril when criminals use it to supercharge their illegal activities, including corporate crime, Monaco told an American Bar Association conference of white-collar lawyers in San Francisco. Now the Nation and World Digest. House passes legislation rebuking border policies. The House passed a bill Thursday that would require federal authorities to detain unauthorized immigrants accused of theft, as Republicans seized on the recent death of a nursing student in Georgia to rebuke President Joe Biden's border policies. After Lakin Riley, age 22, an Augusta University nursing student, was killed last month on a run, Republicans rushed the Lakin Riley Act to the House floor. The bill easily passed, 251 to 170, with all Republicans and 37 Democrats in favor. It was designed to deliver a political point and has little chance of being taken up in the Democratic-controlled Senate. Authorities arrested Jose Ibarra, who is a Venezuelan man who entered the U.S. illegally and was allowed to stay to pursue his immigration case on murder and assault charges in Riley's death. Next up, Tennessee bill seeks to undo Memphis reforms. Republican Tennessee House lawmakers advanced a bill Thursday to undo reforms the city of Memphis made to police traffic stops in response to the fatal police beating of Tyrae Nichols in January of 2023. Republicans held the vote as Democrats accused Memphis Republican Representative John Gillespie of being misleading about when the bill would come up again, resulting in Nichols' parents not coming to the Capitol in Nashville on Thursday. Gillespie called it a miscommunication. Nichols' parents attended Monday when the bill was initially on the itinerary, but it was pushed back as he spoke with them in the gallery. Nichols' death sparked outrage nationally and locally. Videos showed an almost 3-minute barrage of fists, feet, and baton strikes to Nichols' face, head, front, and back, as the 29-year-old black man yelled for his mother about a block from home. 5 officers who were also black were charged with crimes in his death. And then under the briefly column, TikTok. A bill could lead to the popular video sharing app TikTok being unavailable in the U.S., and that bill advanced out of a House committee Thursday in a 50-0 bipartisan vote amid national security concerns. Trump. Former U.S. President Donald Trump was ordered to pay a 6-figure legal bill to a company founded by former British spy Christopher Steele, according to court documents released Thursday. Trump unsuccessfully sued the company over a 2016 dossier that contained allegations about him that later were largely discredited. Nigeria. Gunmen attacked a school in Nigeria's northwest region Thursday and abducted at least 287 students, the headteacher told authorities, the West African nation's second mass abduction in less than a week. 287 students. Leaks. Army soldier Corbain Schultz was arrested on accusations of selling sensitive information related to U.S. military capabilities in exchange for 14 payments totaling $42,000, Justice Department officials said Thursday. Boeing. Federal investigators said Thursday they confirmed pilots' accounts of a brief failure of rudder controls on a Boeing 737 MAX after it landed at a New Jersey airport last month. An emergency landing. A United Airlines jetliner bound for Japan made a safe landing Thursday in Los Angeles after it lost a tire while taking off from San Francisco. Brings us to the halfway point of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette and Fort Dodge Messenger for Friday, March 8th, 2024. I'm your reader, Mary Frances, and you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of folks with print disabilities. And you can catch podcasts or MP3 recordings of this and many of our other local programs on our website, iowaradioreading.org. And on the front page of today's Fort Dodge Messenger, the headline, Stratford Makes Way for Growth. Aging woodhouses have done their time, new bins on the way. Other story, Ag in the Classroom presents Right This Very Minute. And another story, bills addressing AI-created porn and misleading content pass Iowa House. So we'll start with the big story, and there's a large photo of demolition crews. It says they're making quick work of taking down this old wood grain storage facility at United Co-op in Stratford. It shows one wall peeled away with a giant, it's a big piece of machinery that's grabbing and ripping the thing apart. It says, with one wall peeled away, it's easy to see the honeycomb-like structure inside where individual bins held grain. This is from Lori Berglund of the Fort Dodge Messenger. The team from Lee Farm Excavating of Paxton, Illinois, was making it look easy Tuesday afternoon when it began taking down two old woodhouse grain storage facilities at the United Co-op site in Stratford. It's actually pretty stressful, said Cody Kohlmeyer, who was operating one of two big caterpillars that were picking away at the first of two aging structures. So see, they just called them caterpillars, too. It's a thing with a giant long arm. Kohlmeyer, originally from Missouri, said he has been operating such equipment for a decade now. The job appeared to be moving quickly, but Kohlmeyer said that with related concrete work, they would likely be in town some 3 weeks to completely finish the job. United Co-op is taking down two wood houses, which date back to the 1950s and 60s, in order to increase grain storage capacity and speed the process of grain dumping for area farmers at harvest time. Once the area is cleared, work will begin this spring on two 500,000 bushel steel bins. One will be for soybeans and one for dry corn. The project is slated to be done and ready to welcome farmers this fall, or even before, as they empty on-farm storage prior to harvest. It will bring total storage capacity in Stratford to a little over 2 million bushels of grain. Demolition work was drawing a few onlookers, many of them farmers who have hauled to that facility for decades. Faded tin siding was stripped away on Monday to start the demolition project. As the cat opened up the first of the two wood houses, onlookers could see the honeycomb structure of individual bins that were the hallmark of wood grain storage in mid-century American agriculture. They were a great thing in their day, said Doran Stakey, who is location manager for United Co-op at Stratford. Grain could be tracked as to which bin of the woodhouse it was piped to upon delivery. Likewise, grain could be blended among the individual bins. There were even sections in the early days for different grains. At one time, corn, soybeans, and even oats could have been stored in different sections within one woodhouse. The wood walls could even absorb some excess moisture from the grain. In more recent years, only corn and soybeans were stored in each individual woodhouse. While Stakey can appreciate the history behind these woodhouses that have served area farmers for over half a century, he's also looking forward to providing better service for today's members of United Co-op. While the old woodhouses held roughly 100,000 bushels each, each of the new steel bins will hold a 500,000 bushels. With such vastly increased capacity, also comes a need to move that grain faster as farmers bring it in from the fields in the fall. The total project includes a new receiving pit for soybeans and a new 20,000 bushels per hour grain leg. The new leg will replace one that moved grain at a speed of just 3,000 bushels per hour. An existing 10,000 bushels per hour grain leg will remain in service, ratcheting up the ability to move grain quickly. "That's going to make it so nice," Stakey said. "Anytime we can move things more quickly here, that's a big benefit to farmers." A new and larger scale, as well as a brand new office, were completed last fall in the first phase of the renovation project at Stratford. The original demolition plan called for the first woodhouse to be burned. However, that plan had to be scrapped because insurance regulations found that burning would not be allowed from January through March due to the ice buildup that is typical in most winters, according to Nick Wilworth of United Co-op. While this winter has been unseasonably warm, the regulations nonetheless disallowed burning, and the decision was made to use the big equipment to take down both structures. With recent red flag warnings and a new burn ban in place in adjoining Webster County, the physical demolition may have proved to be a wise decision. The Stratford location has been a member of United Co-op since 1994. Formed in 1977, the United Co-op was created when the boards of individual co-ops in Webster City, Highview, Flugstad, Stonega, and Camrar voted to form the new organization. From the front page of the Fort Dodge Messenger, Ag in the Classroom presents Right This Very Minute, and it shows a photo of a group of elementary students smiling, looking at the camera, and holding up papers. "What's that, you say? You're hungry? Right this very minute? Then you need a farmer." Ag in the Classroom in Calhoun County recently used the children's book Right This Very Minute, a table to farm book about food and farming, to teach students about how food gets from farm to table. This lesson offers a fun, fast-paced introduction to the farms and farmers who grow the food we eat each day. Kayleen Berte, Tri-County AITC Coordinator for Farm Bureau, presented Right This Very Minute by Liesl Detlefsen to the first grade students at South Central Calhoun Elementary School in Rockwell City and first grade students at Manson Northwest Webster Elementary School in Barnum. This educational book follows families from their breakfast table to a picnic lunch and evening dinner with dessert. Students gain a better understanding about the number of farmers it takes to produce various meals throughout the day. Several different types of farms are featured in the book, including a citrus grower testing oranges for ripeness, a wheat farmer planting seeds, a family-owned U-Pick strawberry business, and many more examples of agriculture in action. Students learned interesting facts about each food item in the book, as well as states that are the top producers of these foods. Students also received a cartoon drawing of the different types of farmers. Amy Wessel of Gilmore City provided these cartoon drawings, Bertie said. They greatly contributed to the fun and educational value of the AITC lesson. At the end of the book, the class discovered that it took 24 types of farmers to supply the many different foods we enjoy in just one day. The program concluded with a snack of cheddar whale crackers. Before savoring the treat, students had to determine from the label how many different farmers it took to make those crackers. The kids were surprised to learn that it takes 11 different types of farmers to supply the ingredients to make the cheddar crackers. Next story from the front page, bills addressing AI-created porn and misleading content pass the Iowa House. This is from Robin Opsahl. As concerns grow about the misuse of artificial intelligence in creating images and videos, House lawmakers passed several bills Wednesday, adding criminal charges for certain uses of AI, as well as passing legislation requiring minors to receive parental consent to access social media. House File 2240 and Senate File 2243 passed unanimously. They would make it a crime to create media showing a visual depiction of an individual recognizable through their face, likeness, or distinguishing features, engaged in a sexual act, or in full or partial nudity without their consent. A misdemeanor for depictions of adults and a felony for depictions of a minor. Both bills are in response to developing AI technologies that can use existing photos, videos, and recordings to create new depictions, including creating pornography or other obscene materials using someone's photos or videos posted online. Representative Helena Hayes, Republican of New Sharon, said the legislation was necessary to take on the, quote, dramatic rise in the use of artificial intelligence to create non-consensual pornography happening in Iowa and nationwide. AI-generated images and videos mapping a person's face onto other material, sometimes known as a deep fake, can be used to create the, quote, modern take on revenge porn, Hayes said, and can be used to extort or harass a victim. Quote, this content is not only becoming more realistic, but also much easier to create, Hayes said. This increasing problem has led to the FBI, to issue a public service announcement in June of 2023 of the increased use of deepfakes to create explicit content and sextortion schemes, Mr. Speaker. It's a well-known fact that pornography has harmed many, many people. This bill adds deep fake revenge porn into the assault code so that it too can be considered harassment. Hayes said the bill, adding further penalties for AI-generated content depicting minors in explicit images or videos, was important, as the FBI reports this sort of content often involves depictions of minors. The victim may be unaware that the images exist until it is brought to their attention by another person or used against them in an extortion scheme. Once circulated, victims face significant challenges in preventing the continual sharing of the manipulated content or removal from the internet, Hayes said. And here in Iowa, we have faced this very thing already. So this legislation gets ahead of the oncoming problems regarding technology. The representative also gave a reminder that the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children have created a tool called Take It Down to help minors remove and stop the sharing online of sexually explicit media with their depiction. The use of deepfakes and false AI-generated content was also discussed with House File 2549. That's a bill that would add criminal charges for the creation of campaign materials that involve false representations of candidates and issues that could impact voting at an election. The bill also would require campaign materials to include disclosures on the use of AI to generate content included, and if AI-made content is, quote, materially deceptive, showing a candidate saying or doing something that did not happen. Representative J.D. Scholten, Democrat of Sioux City, said the legislation is crucial as Iowa and the nation nears the 2024 election. In the campaign cycle so far, there have already been instances of AI being used to generate content that some say is misleading without disclosure. For example, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' presidential campaign in a supporting super PAC released ads using a generative AI tool to have former President Donald Trump's voice reading his tweets out loud, or showing an AI image of Trump and former chief medical advisor Anthony Fauci together. Neither ad contained disclosures about the use of AI in creating the advertising material. The bill matches the moment, Scholten said. Often legislation lags behind the technology, and we all understand the importance of the 2024 election and election integrity. And so for that, I want to thank all the folks who've worked on this bill. It hasn't been easy. This is cutting-edge technology that we're trying to help protect from. The legislation passed 93-1. As lawmakers discuss the impact of emerging technologies on the internet, representatives also passed House File 2523 by a vote of 88-6. This bill requires minors between the ages of 13 and 18 to obtain parental permission to create accounts on social media platforms and prohibits social media companies from collecting data from minors without parental consent. If the parent gives permission, social media companies would be required to give parents access to see their child's account and personal messages, and to be able to set privacy or time limits, as well as the ability to revoke permission at any time. This bill was amended to more clearly define social media websites, excluding online gaming platforms, as well as websites like a company's online help desk. The Iowa Attorney General could bring civil actions against social media companies for violating the bill. Representative Charlie Thompson, Republican of Charles City, linked the legislation to the previous measures on AI use in creating sexual content. Quote, "I'd like the body to be cognizant of the number of deaths that have occurred because of exploitation of social media by bad actors," he said. "Many of these are younger men, 17 and under, who have been exploited using sexploitation techniques, those referenced. These are preventable suicides, almost a homicide, because some of those bad actors have encouraged the suicide victims to actually commit suicide." Representative Sammy Sheets, Democrat of Cedar Rapids, spoke in support of the measure. "As somebody who grew up during the age of social media, I know firsthand some of the harms that can have on the mental health of children in our state," Sheets said. Worries today. Michael Britt Scotchy, age 69, peacefully passed away at home under hospice care, surrounded by love, on March 3, 2024. Cremation rites have been accorded with the Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Family interment services will take place at a later date in the Corpus Christi Cemetery. Stephen R. Davis, age 76, of Otho, died peacefully at his home Wednesday, March 6th, after a short battle with cancer. Graveside services, Monday, March 11, at the North Lawn Cemetery at 2 p.m. Military honors will be presented by VFW Post number 1856 and the Iowa Army National Guard. Cremation rites and services have been entrusted to the Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Services. Virgil L. Williams of Livermore, funeral Saturday, March 9th at the Zion Lutheran Church in Humboldt at 11 a.m. Visitation, 10 a.m. same day at the church. Burial will take place at the Union Cemetery in Humboldt. Larry B. Rice of Humboldt, funeral services Monday, March 11th, Oak Hill Church in Humboldt at 11 a.m. Visitation, starting at 10 a.m. at the church. Burial will take place at the Indian Mound Cemetery in Humboldt. We do have some local sports today. We always go with local. We prioritize local over national stuff every time. On the front page here, we have a photo of a young man as Isaiah Clark on an arena cross bike, a motocross bike. It says, "Clark takes arena cross event in Daytona. Even an arena cross event can come down to the final seconds. On the final lap in Daytona, Isaiah Clark made a pass on the last curve to overtake five-time GT arena cross champion Michael Hicks for the win. Honestly, I wasn't thinking much more than moving forward," Clark said. "I made a pass, which was a little aggressive, and got it done. The other rider went down, and after that, there wasn't anyone behind me." Clark, a 2019 Fort Dodge graduate, pulled the double dip at Daytona running in Supercross on Friday and Arena Cross on Saturday night. It was a pretty good weekend, he said. I had fun and did well. Hopefully it's not the last. The last impression Honda rider won round 11 of the AMA Supercross Series and jumped in to the top 5 of the point standings. Going to ride and see what happens, Clark said. I don't want to add too much pressure. Clark now sits in 4th place with 234 points behind Kyle Peters at 319, Ryan Brees at 316, and Kyle Peters, oh, they already mentioned that, at 319. On Saturday night, Clark made the main event for the second time this season, placing 8th in his heat. He advanced straight to the main. Quote, they took the top 9 for the main, and I came in 8th, Clark said. It was going well, and I had a strong weekend to be able to get the win and race in a main. After returning from an injury earlier this season, Clark has been coming on strong. It's been going good and a long time coming, Clark said. I was riding through the injury, but after some time off and then getting back to it, I've been in some tight races. With a strong stretch under his belt, Clark has been at the top. The expectations are definitely high, Clark said. I've been riding pretty decently. Clark will head back to Daytona this weekend for rounds 12 and 13 of the AMA Supercross Series. The races will be held on Friday and Saturday night. And it shows another photo. The young man is on his motocross bike, and he's leaning, and he's almost perpendicular to the ground, or parallel to the ground. Then it says Fort Dodge Senior High graduate Isaiah Clark winning his arena cross event. You don't often see in the sports page, story about a cheerleader. Gail Barwin, a rare four-time all-stater. Andy Barwin will be in a familiar spot at the boys' state basketball tournament this weekend. Some may assume it was a foregone conclusion that the St. Edmund senior would be an all-state cheerleader for a 4th consecutive season in 2024, given her track record of success. And Barwin will, in fact, be performing again along Iowa's elite at halftime at the Class 1A and 2A state championships on Friday afternoon inside Wells Fargo Arena. And it shows two photos of her. One, she's cheering and winking right at the camera, wearing a green cheerleader outfit. In the other, the girls have formed a tower, and she is at the top of the tower, arms out, extended, and smiling. None of this was a given. Barwin has earned all of the accolades through hard work, perseverance, and a drive to improve herself with each passing season. Quote, when I was little, I'd go to all-state practices, dreaming of being a part of the team from the second I saw the older cheerleaders perform, she said. Her mother, Amber, is the longtime St. Edmund cheer coach. When I made the all-state list my freshman year, I felt that a piece of me had just fallen into place. I knew my younger self would be so proud. From that point on, I made it a goal to make it all 4 years. Every year, though, it seemingly got harder to make and more nerve-wracking. Looking back now and being able to say I made my dreams come true by being on the list is one of my biggest accomplishments. I know my younger self would be so proud. Barwin is one of just 4 Gales ever to attain all-state status 4 times. She joins an exclusive list with Myla O'Rourke, Emily Eastwood, and Taryn O'Toole. The Iowa Cheerleading Coaches Association selection process is grueling. Nearly 300 candidates from across Iowa try out. Only 29 from all 4 classes combined make the cut, and this season just 5 were from Class 1A. The most rewarding part of the All-State experience is the people I'm surrounded with, and the feeling of when you finish performing, knowing the hard work has paid off, said Barwin. She'll perform at approximately 1:45 and 3:45 today on Friday. She says there's really nothing like it. I get to be a role model for all the little kids who look up to me with big dreams, like I once had, and show off my love for the sport of cheerleading. I'm surrounded by people who are incredibly talented, and they become lifelong friends. It's one of the most rewarding experiences ever. And that's a great place to end our reading of the Globe Gazette and Fort Dodge Messenger for Friday, March 8th, 2024. I've been your reader, Mary Francis, and you've been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Have a great day.
Are you among the millions of Americans living with chronic pain? If so, you may think prescription opioids are the solution. The truth is, the benefits of opioids are limited. Opioids only mask the pain. Opioids also come with serious side effects, ranging from nausea to withdrawal symptoms to overdose. As many as 25% of people who are prescribed opioids struggle with addiction. And those who are addicted to opioids are 40 times more likely to move on to heroin. No one wants to live in pain, but no one should put their health at risk to be pain-free. There is another choice, physical therapy. Physical therapists treat pain through movement and exercise, no warning labels required, and you get to be an active participant in your care. Choose to treat your pain safely. Choose physical therapy. Visit moveforwardpt.com to find a physical therapist near you. This public service announcement is brought to you by the American Physical Therapy Association.